Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Rustam Roy, and we're going to talk about the properties and the structure of water as it relates to alternative medicine, homeopathy, and material science. How are you, Dr. Roy?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on. Before we get started, why don't you take a few minutes just to tell everybody about you and where you are and where to find your information and how you came to do what you're doing.
That's a tall order.
I know.
Well,
sorry.
I was born in India, came to this country in 1946, and have been 60 years in a major research lab at Penn State, which I founded. It became the biggest such lab in the world, and it still is known all over the world as a material scientist. I'm a real hard rock man. I work on diamonds. We got the biggest lab in diamond research, rubies, all the big stuff. So we know about hard science. I'm coming from the bowels of the world of hard science. No equations and all that stuff necessarily. We turn out stuff. So that's my background. I've been much more involved. I call myself a citizen scientist. I'm first of all a citizen. Then I'm a scientist. I follow Mr. Einstein, who said we should always be concerned with the impact of our work on society.
Thank God for people like you.
Linus Pauling was my intellectual mentor, so I came by my interest in what we now call very badly alternative medicine. Our term is whole person healing. You can heal a person through the body, through the mind, or through the spirit, by the body and the mind and the spirit. So we prefer, not only prefer, we are getting rid of alternative medicine, wiping it off the face of the earth, because we think it is alternative to what? So healing is a proper thing which all human beings crave. We all want it. We want more of it, but we're not so sure about most of the medicines nowadays. So, that's my background. Personally, about 10 years ago, I got into it pretty well full time. I do my research. I have a big lab here, lots of postdocs and all. But I do research in the field of whole person healing. What we've tried to do is collect all these small, wonderful units, like Andy Weil. All these are good friends of mine. Andy Weil, I mean, everybody knows him. He's a great guru of this. Deepak Chopra, Dean Ornish, Bernie Siegel, Larry Dorsey, mental healing, spiritual healing, diet, all those things. We've tried to form a coalition. So we get more political power, and we get more social power, and we get the word out. Our present project of what we set up called Friends of Health. Friends of Health is a not-for-profit, and by the way, we stopped raising money. We got rid of our fundraisers. We said if people don't give us any money, out of their goodwill of saying, my God, they're doing a good job. Let me send them some money. We really believe in free will offerings. We really practice that. We've done that for 10 years.
And it's Friends of Health, and what's the website?
friendsofhealth.org.
Now, do you do research there, or do you treat? Or do you
don't treat at all. Our job is to collect the community, to give out the best information. But we did support some of this work on water. But that's a part. Our we couldn't possibly do the research on water that is needed. And I should just, I will come back to water, but let me finish up on the organization. So our posture, and this is very relevant to you, Eva, on your site, you use the word agape, right?
Yes, sir.
And I am a great champion of interpreting language to the average citizen. And I want to tell you what a fan I am of using the term agape.
Thank you.
And I also want to tell you that nobody understands a damn thing when you use it.
So you're right. They don't even know how to say it. They think it's a gape.
Yeah. So this is what I interpret, and I've been giving this talk now in the biggest churches, most influential churches in the country, and in various other venues. I call it Madonna and the Golden Calf. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean the forces of Goliath and David are arrayed. On one side is the force of good, which is symbolized by Madonna. I'll explain that in a minute. And the other side is evil, which in our world, our today, 2009 world, is symbolized and practiced in the love of money. So why do I call it the golden calf? Madonna, we know, is the parental love. A mother looking after a child. The Madonna pictures, you know, is not only a woman, it's a woman and a child.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that love of mother for child which is the actual embodiment of the maximum that human love is capable of. Unrepayable love. A mother cannot be repaid. You're not looking for something. She can get a nice feeling, and that's exactly what we should get. So mothers give love, and do good parents, good husbands, and good men in loving kids. That's the agape effect, unrepayable love. On the golden calf, I don't even know if most people even have read the story of the golden calf. If they haven't, they can go to Exodus 32 and read it. When Moses comes down from the mountain, he breaks the tablets, the Ten Commandment tablets. And then he tells Aaron, what they're doing, they're worshipping the golden calf. Worshipping the symbol of money, not the symbol, the reality of money.
Right.
So what does he do? He not only chews out, I mean, breaks up the calf and all that stuff, but you know, 10/11 of the people there were killed. God orders Moses to say, kill those guys. It's that severe statement against the love of money. We used to have an expression that money is the root of all evil. Well, nobody in Wall Street wants to hear that. Nobody in our success-oriented culture, where we define success by Donald Trump and by having money, can ever understand that most religions all speaking out against the love of money. So your emphasis on agape, Eva, is a very fine one as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm honored that you even took the time to look. Thank you.
So maybe we should continue.
Okay. I want to talk some about, I have a lot of questions here. I know that the answers are going to be quite complicated, and I'll do the best I can. I don't have the language always, but I'll do the best I can to ask these questions. I know that a lot of your focus has been on the structure of water.
That's correct.
One of the things that I thought about is that you said that on your site or somewhere I saw that you said there are 64 states of water. And, you know, 64 is a power of two. It's binary. So I wanted to know what your thoughts are on that. You know,
okay.
Yes or no. What's the importance of that?
Let me start at the beginning, right? You said correctly that most of my work is on the structure and properties of water, and they're related. So first let me tell you some things for your audience. They may, this might be a little education. You know, all kinds of matter of the same composition exists in many structures. Let's take ordinary sand, right? sand is a mineral called quartz. But that same composition, silicon and two oxygen, that's what SiO2, just like water is H2O. Silicon dioxide is sand, but silicon dioxide exists in at least a few hundred structures, completely different in properties. Now I'll give you another one. You know the lead pencil that you use to write with, that has in it a certain element called carbon, right? It's graphite. The structure is graphite, and the composition is carbon. But when you go to diamond, guess what? Diamond structure is diamond, but the composition is identical. It is carbon. Now, that's an example which stops all our stupid skeptics who know nothing about modern science in their tracks, because here is the proof, which is in everything that we do in material science, that the same composition, like H2O, water, can exist in many, many structures. Now, one thing we did in my personal research in the 70s and 80s with my colleagues and postdocs and students was to show that many liquids can have different structures. Everybody used to say, well, liquids only have one structure. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And with water, all the enemies of homeopathy used to say, these homeopaths are kooks. They're crazy. Water is just water.
Let me ask you a question here.
Yes.
What is the relevance of structure or versus composition? And what's the importance that the people need to know about this structure?
The people need to know that it is only structure that counts, not composition. That's what I'm coming
to. What's the difference?
The difference is, as I was illustrating, carbon is, its composition is only C,
okay.
Just carbon. But its structure can be as hard as diamond or as soft as graphite.
Okay.
The hardest material in the world and the softest material in the world have the identical composition. Isn't that something?
It's amazing, and I've never thought about it.
Nobody's thought about it. Such a good, it's a good illustration. I love it. I have some nice videos with stuff. You can go on my website, rustamroy.com, RustamRoy.com. You can pick out some of these papers and the stuff. But basically what I'm saying is the structure of water is what's important about water. You asked about the 62 or 64 structure. I don't know, Eva, if that's any magic number. The lead, now, let me tell you, this is not some view of Professor Roy at Penn State. This is the consensus view of the scientists who actually study water. The leading physicist of the world, the leading chemist of the world in the water business, all agree on this. Martin Chaplin, you can go to his website, martinchaplin.com.
How do you spell
that? Or even just go to water, you'll get his name.
Okay.
Or structure of water. In London, he's a leading chemist. He gives all these beautiful pictures of the structure of the molecules of water. Then you can go to Boston University, the senior most professor of physics at Boston University, and you will see his innumerable papers. That's where the 62 came from, by the way. He said that at least
62 or 64. That just seems important to me, because, you know, everything that is, the ground of all being, is binary, yes or no, on or off, black or white. That just seems to be important to me. I don't know why.
Well, I don't know what the last number he's given is, but I forget whether it's 62 or 64, because I did not think of it, Eva, as you're thinking about it. But it's a number like that. But the fact is that we may come up with 10 more. We will come up with many, many more. Why? Because we can now make water, and lots of American companies are making structured water. And that is the really wonderful thing about what's happened, is that the unleashing of the more knowledge about the most important single material to human beings in life and in health. Would you agree that nothing is more important than water?
Absolutely, I agree.
Absolutely. Now, let me tell you a fact. The National Institutes of Health, and I wish every reader would write in about it, National Institutes of Health spend $30 billion of our money for human health, right? That's all they do. They don't do dog's health or cat's health. Human health. Water is the most important material in the world. We go to Mars. We spend $500 million going to Mars to find water because it's essential for life. Do you think the National Institutes of Health spends one dime? They have no scientists on the staff. They couldn't find the research group. Nothing. Zero on water. If every one of you, if 10 of your hearers would write in to the director of NIH and say, how, please send me a list of all the scientists working on water or what papers they have published. And how come you don't do it? That would be the kind of action we must take. I'm an action-oriented person. I don't believe we can sit around and think warm thoughts. We've got to do something. And about water, the fact is that the medical community, I repeat, high-tech medical community, we who are all biochemists, I'm a chemist by training. I'm a physical chemist. But I think our medical brethren got too narrow. In our Friends of Health, we say we want to combine the wisdom of the ages with the power of modern science. But by science, I do not exclude all of science except biochemistry. Let me give you a fact. Civil engineers have done more for human health than all the medical profession through all of the last 200 years. All of it. Why? Because civil engineers brought us pure water and took away the sewage. Had nothing to do with medicine, as we call it. Second fact, who do you think gives you all those instruments in our lab, all the ultrasound which you use? That was all the latest ultrasound was developed in my lab by Professor Newnham, Professor Cross, and that's it is a diagnostic tool, x-rays, surgery. That didn't come out of medicine. So let's not keel over in front of one community. They do a wonderful job. We support all kinds of good high-tech medicine. But if it is done for money, we have learned that medicine done for money is bound to lose its effectiveness. That's a pretty strong statement.
Yes,
but
it is.
It's an old statement. Old statement. In the Ayurveda, 3,000 years old in India, they said no doctor should ever take payment for medicine for his healing. Why? Because of that Madonna effect. If you're chasing money, you're weakening your healing powers. I'm not making this up, right?
Yeah, I agree with you.
So the powers of modern medicine, which is money for healing for hire, will never work. It is bound to fall in on itself. It is doing it as we speak. The system is collapsing. Just like the Wall Street collapse was, making money for money's sake, even that didn't work. Now we are finding healing for money's sake won't work. That doesn't mean doctors should starve. It means that people will pay. They will, if you're doing something for somebody, there is goodwill. They will pay for that and they'll support it. So we believe many, many hospitals used to do that. They paid a doctor a good salary. They should. But he worked for the healing. He didn't think about who should make more money and how will this work and all that stuff. As soon as money enters into the equation, it ends, it takes away from the healing power.
Yeah, I agree.
So let me get back to water, right?
I have some more questions I want to ask you about your paper, some phrases in your paper so I can understand it.
Okay.
Better. you talk in one of your paper about the Van der Waals bonds. What is that, and what is the significance of that?
Okay, that is very significant. The structure of in water, the oxygen and hydrogen and all that are held together. Otherwise, all the molecule atoms would fly off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in liquid water, when you drink your glass of water, in that is a mixture of H2O molecules. Now I'm coming to that. And H2O oxygens and hydrogens are held together by covalent bonds. That's a kind of, it's a strong bond. And by a hydrogen bond, which is a substantially weaker bond. But most interestingly, in liquid water, all those units are held together by a very weak bond called a Van der Waals bond, named after a Dutch scientist in about 1900. And that's a very weak bond. Now, why is that so significant? It's extremely significant. Why? Because you can't change a bond as strong as that covalent bond. You can't break it easily. So you couldn't change the structure. Agreed. A hydrogen bond, it's 10 times weaker. But even that's pretty strong. But when you say that Mr. Emoto is thinking thoughts and changing water, boy, that's got to be pretty weak. And the part that was missed by everybody till we came on the scene was the important bond in liquid water is the Van der Waals bond, which holds together neutral, uncharged clusters or oligomers or the little chunks of water which are formed. Some people call them clusters.
I have a question now. Is that because of some magnetism or is it because some...
No, it's the electrostatic field,
okay.
Not the magnetic field. But now you're coming to something ticklish because that is what all these companies have learned to actually make something out of. They put an electric field that is like a plasma or something around it. There are at least 20 companies. Most of them come from Russia. They bring the Russian knowledge here and in Oregon and in California and in New York. We've got companies that make structured water. They give them all kinds of names. But basically, they're structured water. You can buy these machines on the web. You can go out in Kangen, K-A-N-G-E-N, there. Japanese machines which you can buy for differently structured waters. And these structured waters have different properties. That's all you can say specifically. I can say absolutely, scientifically, 110% that every structure must have different properties.
And
so that's the beauty of it, because now the magnetic field does come into it, because the magnetic fields also are involved wherever there's an electric field. But the electric field is the forcing function. People are looking at the magnetic influences also on water. They have not been found as profound as the electric field, which is natural. But it is important that the Japanese are doing a lot of work with very, very weak magnetic fields on changing water. So both electric fields and magnetic fields, we know the magnet, what a magnetic field is.
Mm-hmm.
When you put your little advertising on the refrigerator
right.
magnet, if you hold it out 1 inch, there's a magnetic field between your little chunk in your hand and the refrigerator. So that little field can have a profound effect on water.
And since I know you're a chemist, I want to ask you something that I haven't seen anything about on your website, and I'm probably getting out on the edge, but I want to ask it anyway. Somebody or somewhere, I heard that, you know, a lot of people have these mineral wasting problems. They can't retain minerals well. And somebody mentioned to me that one reason that might happen is if you are iridium deficient, because iridium was very sticky. Does that make any sense to you?
Not immediately. No, I don't know what iridium does. That's different.
I just didn't have anybody to ask that question, so I thought maybe you might know.
Well, I'm sorry I can't answer that.
Okay, my next question to you is, you know those new ionic foot baths where you put this, you put these metal plates down into some water, and then you stick your feet down in there,
yes,
and all this stuff comes out because of the electric current that's in there.
Yeah.
How does that work? Really work?
That is relevant. That is relevant to what I was telling you just now. Those are electric fields on water, and sometimes you put in salt, sometimes you don't,
yeah.
And depending on the particular gadget, etc. But they're really doing something. Now, whether that's good for what ails you, that I don't know. But I do know that it is changing the water, and it may be doing many things to it. But if you just put an electric field on water, it will change it, but it depends on what it's doing, of course.
This topic came up yesterday, as a matter of fact. How could that help somebody? How could that cause them to pull out heavy metals? How could that work?
No, heavy metals, I don't go
in
there.
In the water.
I'm thinking about how heavy metals do. All I'm saying is that it can change the structure of water, which changes the properties, and it could diffuse in a little faster into the through the skin and stuff like that, and it may help some transdermal transport or something.
Okay.
But I think that's pushing the edge. I think there are much more important things where we can prove how important this water has become now, right? Let me give you the best example. You can go to a GNC store, and I'm not shelling, we never allow anybody in our lab ever to take $1 from any company. Never. Nobody can take $1. Of course, they can be paid for their work, but nobody takes any kind of financial interest. We don't flack for any company. We do research on all kinds of water. The water I'm going to talk about is a metallic colloid.
Mm-hmm.
That means it's a suspension of very, very tiny metallic particles in water, which is permanent. You know them well, they're silver colloids. You can buy them in any CNC store. And we worked with one or two companies. They were pretty good. We don't particularly lack for them, but they're good. We use this stuff from Utah. It's good. But many companies make good stuff. That's not the point. The point is very important. Let me tell you what the facts are. There's 1 part per million of silver in 1 million parts of water. That means it is 10 times purer than any drinking water you get from a city tap. Maybe 100 times purer. So, we are talking about very pure water. Now, this particular water with silver particles is a better antibiotic than most of the penicillins and erythromycins and vancomycins that you can buy. What am I saying? Am I mad? No. We just have the data.
I use that on my kids, by the way. And my child hurt his leg the other day and got a very bad wound.
Yep.
Got very infected. And I soaked a cotton ball in it and put it on top of the wound, and it was healed in 3 days.
That's
right. It was bad.
But you should be telling. I mean, I don't understand it. People, little kids with earaches are screaming. You take 2 drops of this water, put it in their ear, and in 2 minutes, it's gone. The kid's running around like mad.
Yeah.
So I don't know what, if you have sore throats, every teacher I know, we are giving them a bottle and they say, I don't get my cold from the kids anymore. What are people doing? But that's too cheap, you see. People don't want to have that kind. If you want to make money, this is not for you. You want to get well, it's one of the ways. It's no magic bullet or something, but it's a pretty damn good thing. It's working on malaria, we can find now. And the nice good news for all of us is the FDA of the United States is no longer king of the hill. Who cares about the FDA? U.S. companies are cowering, so they're taking their work to Europe. They're taking it to India. They'll take it to China. They'll take it to Australia. So we can't call the shots anymore. So we better get used to it. We are not cock of the walk anymore.
Now, magnetic fields change the properties of homeopathy?
Now, we come to homeopathy. That's
kind of like homeopathy, isn't it?
It is not. Homeopathy was what we have done, and I cannot speak from a viewpoint of does homeopathy cure asthma? Does it cure Anika for pain or something. I don't have the clinical data. I have read hundreds of papers by my close colleague, Iris Bell, at the University of Arizona. She has done that kind of work, which shows very, very good evidence that homeopathy works. Now, most people don't answer the question that it works. They say it cannot work.
Yeah.
Why cannot it work? Because it is just water. Just water. If you go to my website, there's a very nice article by event at the University of Connecticut. There was a big international fight-off about homeopathy. And Professor Novella from Yale made the statement that, how can it work, ladies and gentlemen? After all, it is just water. Too bad for him that I was the next speaker, because I showed that water is not one substance. It's one of those 60 substances, and different waters have different properties. And once you have different properties, you can't say it doesn't work. Let me bring in something beyond magnetic fields. You, Eva, talked about, does magnetism work? Does the magnetic field work? Electric fields work very well. Magnetic fields work. But there's one very subtle thing, two things. One is nanobubbles. When you shake water, right? If you shake, you get little bubbles, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're shaking a lot. Well, you get little tinier bubbles too. Well, when the bubbles get very tiny, they don't disappear anymore. That's a colloid, just like the silver colloid. You have an air colloid. You have air trapped in the middle of water. And that air structures the water around it. And same thing we find if you put water next to a surface, the surface layers of water for a huge distance get changed by that surface. That is called epitaxy. You learn from the skin, the epi, of the material that you have. If it's a piece of gold, it'll take on one structure. If it's a piece of certain special minerals, it'll take on a completely different structure.
Let me make sure I understand here. If you set a glass of water near these substances, it'll take on some of their properties?
Right. But it'll take on the structuring of the water will be changed in the surface layers impinging on that material that you put in. You drop a coin of something in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Near that surface, near that coin, or near the glass of your glass, the glass that you drink out of structures the water. People in India, of course, for many 5,000 years, have been drinking out of silver. You know, people were born with silver spoons in their mouth. That expression came when the British learned from India that drinking out of silver vessels was very healthy. Same deal as a silver colloid. It structures the water. Big deal. Now people know about it. So people, if you want a drinking vessel, it should be silver or copper. That's the best drinking vessel. Now maybe we can coat glass with silver or copper into good, healthy vessels.
I hadn't thought about that. That's amazing.
So the homeopathy thing was, we did not prove homeopathy works on a particular disease. We destroyed the totally unscientific, erroneous excuse on which that claim was built. It was built on the idea that water has only one structure. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And you've got the leading physicist, leading chemist, and leading material scientist of the world saying so. So if you have an MD degree and you haven't studied these fields, it'll be very tough to stand up against them.
So let me ask you this question then. What about intention and water?
Wonderful question. Lynn McTaggart was supposed to be on your show. And, of course, we think that intention can possibly even show its structure change in water. And Lynn and I have been trying that, and we are trying to get the most sensitive instruments to show how intention, if and when, with our measurements, and what we are doing is pretty crude by our standards, because we have no money, but we have goodwill. So we try with the best of the equipment we have. We're not exactly a farm boys off the farm or something, but I believe that intention is a very powerful vector. Now, let me tell you what a vector means. That is a word your audience should remember. You know, if you say how big is something, then the volume of that object is a scalar quantity. That means it just lies there. It's a lump. And so we can say, what's the pressure? That's a lump. What's in the atmospheric pressure? That's a scalar quantity. A vector quantity has direction and mass. So when you have an intention which is aimed at something, and that's what Lynn is trying to do, they must all focus on that water tray in your lab at Penn State. And these intenders, and they say, I want that water to change. And the emotion that they carry and their goodwill or the intensity of that emotion is part of that vector quantity. So okay. Deeply caring between two sisters. One sister is killed in a car accident. The other sister immediately picks it up.
Right.
How is that?
Because okay. I have another question here. Emoto's work, some people were having trouble reproducing that work. Why do you think that is?
It is not easy to reproduce. Neither Bill Tiller nor I think that's an easy measurement. So we always look for other measurements. That's a tricky measurement. And I think when Dean Radin has done his work on it, I trust Dean Radin's work. But it's still a little bit on the edge. But it is a tricky measurement. I think there are many better measurements. Our measurements are made on spectroscopic data used by every chemist all over the world. We find that microwave radiation can tremendously change water. Radio frequency radiation can tremendously change water. And am I making this up, or is it true that radio frequency radiation, right in your shortwave range, can actually break up water and make it burn? You remember the story of Mr. Kanzir?
Yeah, I was going to ask. That's going to be my next thing to ask you about. I know you did that.
I did that with him. He was the inventor. No credit to me, zero. But we kind of proved it, explained it. We did all that stuff. And it was a wonderful discovery by a wonderful man who really put his... Again, he had no interest in money. He was a reasonably wealthy man. He was doing this to save the world from cancer. But quite accidentally, he was given this gift of finding that a vector field, remember what I'm saying now, it was not a regular radio frequency beam. It was a vector, it had a direction. And that baby can break up water and make it burn. Actually, my wife and my granddaughter went with me to see it, and if you drop some water in the flame, in the beam, it bursts like a sheet into flames. You can hardly believe it. You can't do that. Sounds like free energy too. Pardon?
It sounds like free energy too.
No, it is not free energy.
No, but isn't it giving out something without giving out more than it's taking in?
No. That's the kind. No, nobody ever thinks that. But even not free energy, because you don't know if you're going to be. You've got to put in the radio beam, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that takes energy. And the question will be, do you get more out? There are many other things you can do with it. The much more important statement is not that it makes free energy. The accurate statement is it breaks the oxygen-hydrogen bond, which no scientist can accept.
What does that mean for us?
Pardon?
What does it mean for humanity?
It means that there's going to be a big change in science. Science is very, very conservative. And I mean, they're worse than the Pope. They've become a Vatican of science. They've got people who are... You can't publish that. Mr. John Maddox, editor of Nature for 20, 30 years, died last week. And even he, towards the end of his life, even confessed that if the original paper sent in by... to announce Francis Crick and... His colleague sent in the paper on DNA. He said it would never have been published in Nature. So today, we fortunately have a bunch of scientific cardinals who decide what should be published. I used to call them the Ayatollahs of academia. But they are.
I know it.
It's a very dangerous situation. that we do not get to the public, like this information on silver colloids, right? It is simply, slowly, but now the internet is going to change all that, because slowly, slowly, in 5 years, no more of that can be kept undersea.
Hey, let me ask you, that made me think about something. I have a silver maker myself. I make it all the time.
Yeah.
But it also reminded me of that blue man. People fear colloidal silver water.
Yeah.
Because of that blue man. What can you tell us about that?
What I can tell you is that don't screw up. It's silver going blue. Remember when they thought, the pharmaceutical companies thought, this guy will be a great advertisement against silver. Bad thinking. Because the guy was asked, he said, what do you mean? I'm just a little blue. You can't. I get on Oprah because I'm a little blue, and you think I should stop it? Are you mad? I've become a celebrity? What are you talking about?
Is it because the particles were too big, or what was that?
It was it was not a silver colloid. You've got to get that right.
Okay.
It was silver in solution that does that.
What's the difference?
The difference is this is a little particle of metal which is floating around.
Mm-hmm.
A silver in solution means you've got a single atom of solution which is bobbing around, and it goes down and it goes into every system. The silver metal particle hangs around as a silver metal particle.
I'm not following.
Gold will do the same thing.
I'm not understanding here. Help me. So if we have one of those little, like my silver, where you put the silver bars in the water and turn a small current on it, was that
the same
thing the man was using?
If you do it carefully, right?
Uh-huh.
You don't overdo it, and you don't let any salt get in that water.
Okay.
That's the main thing is not to ionize it. I'm being scientific, but you don't want it to, like, you know, you can go down, Argyrol used to be a great treatment. In the beginning of the 20th century, we used to use silver in all sorts of forms because we pasted it on people and all that stuff. It did the good because of the silver part of it, but it had potential harm. And it's not a big deal. I mean, the man becoming blue, he drank quarts of that stuff every day for 9 years.
Okay, that's the difference. Okay. Rather than a teaspoon a day.
A teaspoon a day is good shape, and don't overdo it. If it becomes colored, you're in the wrong game. It should be transparent.
Okay, so you don't want it to be, sometimes it turns amber. You don't want it to do that, right?
No, you don't want it to go that far.
Okay.
I mean, keep it dilute. That's the main thing. That is the main thing. He had too much in solution, and he drank too much. But even then, as it said, didn't do him any harm. That's the proof of the pudding. He's the best proof of all that can do no harm.
Right. Perfectly logical. Okay. I follow you now.
There you are now. What else did you have for me before I get lost into something else?
I want to ask you, I also looked on your somewhere with you, and I found something about, let me look at my notes here. I want to know what your life vessel treatment is. That was pretty amazing.
That is true. That is actually, some of your readers can write this down. JSHO.org. That's the Journal of Scientific Healing Outcomes. That means JSHO. We have published a new journal, which is being published every quarter now and will be a monthly soon. On this kind of stuff. We had one, in fact, on silver waters, and we have one, this issue, on the life vessel. If people want to get that, it's an online journal. They can only get the abstracts online. They have to subscribe. Again, this is a do-gooder organization. If somebody, we believe, if people like it, they will pay for the journal. They get something out of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a report on the two best things we have found in 10 years of looking by a very active. One was silver colloids in all its forms. And the other one was what is called the life vessel, which is an irradiation with very gentle music and light. Just a light above your head in a special form, so you get light and sound. All ancient healing techniques. Andy Weir's beautiful things on healing as he went to the Hindu temples and heard the temple bells, and he knew there was something to that sound. So this is a vessel. This is a, you just lie down in a, like a couch, and you have this stuff over your head. It exposes you to sound and light for 1 hour. That's it.
And is it a colored light therapy? Or
it is a colored light.
Okay.
With different colors, and it's in a particular geometric form, and I don't know what the exact value and meaning of that is, but you feel a little vibration, and from the vibration itself, and then you hear the music as a sound, which is very important.
Mm-hmm.
That acoustic part, acoustic radiation does the same thing, like, you know, electric fields and magnetic fields. Sound fields can do the same thing.
Is it LED light, or what kind of light is it?
It is not an LED light. It's actually an incandescent light, but
okay.
It is filtered through different colored filters.
Okay.
So it is, there is some light therapy to it, which is part of it, but it's in, and it has a very important, critically important way of setting the light and sound to do you the best good. That's the secret of the vessel, is that.
Is the sound like hemi-sync, or is it just soothing, or is it frequencies? What
It is. You got the right, your last sentence is the right one.
Frequency.
It is a selection of particular frequencies.
Okay.
And it's a mix of the, so he gets normal CDs, which are very popular, very quiet, soothing, but he has selected them for certain frequencies.
Interesting.
And those frequencies are the ones which are most used. But it's a range of frequencies. And so everybody goes in, and they all get changed. And you can measure that. They measure you before and after. So it isn't something bogus. You can just go in, spend half an hour, you come out, you're different. Your autonomic nervous system has been rebalanced. That is what a life vessel does, is a balancing of your autonomic nervous system. That means the blood going up and the blood going down are brought
very
into
important.
Balance.
So, what about, I'd like to hear some of the stories like that, how do you say this word, scleroderma?
Scleroderma is a disease which is incurable by Western medicine.
That was amazing, that story.
And it's, your skin goes black and it hardens like a leather shoe. I'm not making it up. And I actually saw the woman there. She was a Native American, with a PhD from Berkeley or something, UC Irvine or something. Anyhow, she came in and she was almost going to have her fingers amputated and the leg amputated. And her sister told her, go here. She went there, and the second time she was there, I was there. And she showed me, she pulled down her blouse almost down to her breast and said, look, it's all gone down in two sittings. I've canceled my surgery. 2 years later, she was completely free.
And that was just based on the frequencies?
It was based on the light and sound. And whatever they did, God knows what the heck it did, but I saw all the data from UC Irvine, not from some schlock place. They showed that her mercury levels and her iron levels or heavy metal levels had gone way down, and they'd gone way up in her urine. So you see the nice correlation. It went out of her body. And it showed up in the urine. I've been there when they had cancer patients in, and I could smell the, you know, the big molecules in those anesthesias and all the chemotherapy stuff. You can smell it out in the room.
Right.
So it is excreting that. So it detoxes your system.
All right, we've got about 8 minutes left.
All right.
What would you like to talk about that we've not already talked about? I would like to mention the ASEAM conference this year, for anybody that's not familiar with ASEAM, the International Society for the Study of Subtle Energy and Energy Medicine, go take a look. It's ISSSEEM.org. That's actually how I found Dr. Roy, thank goodness. Now, anything you want to talk about that we've not already talked about?
Well, I want to talk about the fact that this year in February, there was the most important meeting on health, which neither the White House nor the press even covered. This was at the Institute of Medicine, which is what Abraham Lincoln founded, the National Academies of Science in Washington, D.C., representing the United States' highest level of scientists. So we have the Academy of Science, the Academy of Engineering, and the Academy of Medicine, essentially. The medical group convened a meeting. They brought in all the alternative people, Reiki, acupuncture, everything else, all of which were regarded as idiots, 20 years ago, they were arresting people in San Francisco for doing acupuncture. So here we are, all in that same room, 700 people, some of the leaders of the world, Senator Harkin giving one of the main speeches, the president of the National Academy, all these people speaking about where we now come. So they admitted, in a way, for the homeopaths' great joy, they admitted all these different procedures into the club. They said, look, we are all healers together, and we can must look into what we've been doing. And they got rid of certain terms, like alternative medicine. They said, we should never use that. Like placebo effect. That's one I've been pushing a long time. Get rid of it. That's a meaningless term. A good term is expectation effect. If the patient or the healer expects healing, you get more of it. That's the intention. Remember, you asked the question about intention. Jesus says to the blind man, do you believe, right? Do you expect something to happen, folks? So expectation effect is the right term to use. Drop the word placebo. Drop the word alternative medicine. But this event, 5 minutes from the Washington Post office, huge event, was not one reporter from any newspaper or television station was sent there. The only reporter was the Friends of Health reporter reporting to Huffington blog, reporting to the internet, but nobody else covered it. Now do you see the dilemma of getting the word out without trying to get through the barrage of the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industry's wall, which is a biggest wall of China around all the information media.
I don't know what to say except I support that. I mean, I know it. I've had it in my own life. You know what I do.
Yeah. Well, I think all your readers should be taking it upon themselves to do something. I think that's what religion is about. It's nothing about belief. It has what you do with your life, what you stand for, and what you act on. And it is writing letters to the congressman, writing a letter to the NIH director, sending money to the organization that you believe in. I'm not appealing for funds for Friend of Health. If you like it, do it. But if you think this is worth doing, we should be putting our money where our mouth and our love lies.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Dr. Roy, for coming on tonight. Take one last minute and give your website so people can find you.
Right. There are two websites I urge you to go to. One is Friends of Health. That's all one word, friendsofhealth.org. And the other one is Rustam Roy, RustamRoy.com. All one word, then .com.
Thank you. I hope you'll come back.
Thank you.
You're amazing, and I applaud your work. Thank you.
Hi, Eva.
Good night.
Thank you, Agape.
It's been my pleasure. Good night.
Night.